Good morning and welcome to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks for Monday, February 3rd, 2020. I am David Ellis, and our producer with us today is Michelle Brathwaite. We go up until 1 o'clock, is it? Because we think we got sports. We do get confused from time to time with whether we are going to be closing at 1 or 2 o'clock, but I'll clarify that for you. In the meantime, though, we're going to have with us in the studio Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Mr. Ryan Strong. He's here today to talk about the Barbados economy. And of course, the big question about the economy relates to the issue of growth. People are concerned about the fact that while we have been able to stabilize the economy in certain respects, the whole question of the link between that, the macroeconomic growth, and what is happening at the lower ends of the society, they cannot see that particular link right now. So we expect to hear more about that and related matters in this conversation with the Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Ryan Strong. Your numbers as usual, or your main number, is 4341790, and we also have 266-4862 as the WhatsApp number with which you communicate with us. So let's say good morning and a warm welcome to Minister Strong. Your overview of the economy at the moment and what else needs to be done.
Good morning, David. Good morning to your listeners. let me first state this morning that the economy as we begin 2020 is delicately poised. And this has come after the hard work certainly of the government to provide an era of stabilization over certainly the last 20 months. And therefore, what we are anticipating for 2020 and certainly going forward is that an acceleration of the implementations of the reform, certainly at the macro level, and the unlocking, as it links to the unlocking of growth, is going to be critical with respect to the average Barbadian seeing the benefits in terms of the work that we've done over the last 20 months. And the reality is, David, that as in most households today, like the government would have been with respect to its debt situation, most households still aren't saving the way that they were saving 10, 12, 15 years ago. And the reality is that until we get new infrastructural projects going, new levels of consumption going, which is why we have been accelerating the payment with respect to the arrears that government would have owed a number of individuals with respect to their personal income taxes and other taxes, as well as payments to businesses for their tax arrears, as well as for the supplies of goods and services that we would have inherited 20 months ago. Now, the circumstance that individual households and individuals find themselves in is that, like the government, as we are paying persons now and trying to do so in an accelerated fashion, persons are now in a situation where they're paying down some of the very debt that they have within their personal circumstances or the household circumstance or in the business circumstances. So therefore, we are not seeing as yet new consumption, new investment, and certainly that could not have happened certainly over the last 20 months simply because of the nature of how we had to unravel government's link in all of that.
So how much longer do you anticipate that this will continue?
Well, the reality is the mechanism for unlocking growth is complicated, and until we see, one, new projects coming out to the ground, which we've been, at the same time, we've been focusing on establishing stability. And stability meaning that if you engage government, you will be paid on time, one. Two, that the tax environment is relatively certain so that you can plan your investment out. And that all of the players, whether they're the financial institutions, looking at businesses as a going concern, can see that the government and the platform that the government has laid is relatively certain, notwithstanding the geopolitical nature that's happening internationally. but that domestically, there's a level of stability that allows businesses and individuals to plan. And so therefore, as the government itself gets itself right with the people and certainly with the public by repaying the arrears that were built up over the last 10 years, that I certainly anticipate that the position of businesses and households in this country will change over the next 2 years. But as I want to reiterate that the level of savings, and I think I want to stress that in terms of what the discussion is with respect to the average citizen, the level of savings that persons, for example, who are, and I'll say this, persons who are in between 50 and 65 now, for example, don't have the same level of savings as they did 15 years ago. And therein lies a little problem, because this demographic of persons now are, in a sense, seeking to replenish those savings and almost competing with respect to their children and grandchildren with respect to the same space for jobs.
But some of them are telling you that the government's restructuring program took away their money.
No, well, technically, no. From the perspective that I'm saying, when you look at Barbados and the circumstances of households, as I said, because persons would have used their savings over the last 10 years or so to help finance their circumstances in a situation where, for example, if you look within the public service, as we all know, there were no salary increases for some time. But beyond that, the financing, using your savings to finance household consumption would have led to a situation where now, as I said, the individual households now no longer have the kinds of savings that they did before.
And you don't want to concede that government policies could also have impacted on that. I mean, I just mentioned the debt restructuring and the extent to which so many people had put their money into government paper and expected to get a return on that investment, all like no. And then on top of that, you've had the level of taxation. I mean, you take all of that into consideration, they may argue that the government must take some responsibility, notwithstanding the fact that they understand that we have had a difficult economic scenario confronting us.
Right. So the particular point about the debt restructuring is interesting, because we sought to restructure the debt was designed specifically to ensure that we maintain across the fabric of the society a level of stability in the families, certainly across this country.
That's the objective of government. But the point I'm making to you is that there is that unwitting component to it, which will effectively dampen the supply of money out there.
Well, let me put it to you this way. The difference between, and I just want to make it clear, we are shortly going to go to Parliament with respect to next year's estimates. And we will see savings on the part of the government of $1.2 billion this year. And I accept, on the face of it, that's the monies that we're removing from the economy by way of the payment of debt, having restructured it. But what that has allowed us to do, that $1.2 billion, the difference between that approach in terms of the debt restructuring vis-a-vis if we had to use the same, to achieve the same result, the entire wage bill for the public sector in terms of central government is about $750 odd million. And therefore, when we look at what we transfer to SOEs, on top of that is probably close to another $200 million or so with respect to salaries within the context of SOEs. So we took a decision to restructure the debt in order to achieve for the greatest national good in terms of being able to shield families and individuals from the full brunt of the impact of the entire restructuring of government's public finances. And so therefore, I'm suggesting to you that yes, for those persons who may have invested in certainly government paper, and for a whole host of reasons they did, but structurally, the way that we focus on it was to ensure that we, one, ensure that persons will have confidence in any public paper that government may issue in the future, because the ability to repay must be trustworthy. And therefore, the cost of, and certainly the interest payments that some persons were getting because the government's credit rating was poor on the one hand, created a situation where the very investment that needed to go to young people and building up growth and opportunities for the country was being, in a sense, charged with respect to government being able to finance its operations.
Who understand
and it's a difficulty.
That specific objective and the balancing act, mm-hmm. the difficulty mm-hmm. associated with it. I was just pointing to the fact that while you may win on the one hand, you can lose on the other, and that is the stark reality facing a number of people
out there.
I accept
that the debt restructuring for those persons who had investments in public securities, in terms of the reduction and in terms of the interest rates and the terms, will impact certainly the income that they will derive from it. But on the other hand, the ability for the country to move forward as a whole certainly was much more critical in the circumstances that we found ourselves in. In that circumstance. So all I'm saying is that the rebalancing, and certainly in the context of where ordinary Barbadians now can start saving again. And I think that is where we are focused on the initiatives that will see ordinary Barbadians being able to one, get a job, a decent job, which then will lead to enhance or the ability to start saving. Now, I don't want to get into discussion about necessarily what the banks are offering for interest rates, but saving, irrespective of whatever the interest rates happen to be, is a critical part of how healthy an economy happens to be.
So you began by saying that the economy is delicately poised. Mm-hmm. We need to get new projects going. Individual households are now paying down their debt, and we are not seeing new investment and consumption. You began from that.
For the most part, yeah.
From that position. Yeah. I asked you, therefore, to spell out, give us a specific time frame within which you believe we will see some improvement. And you say to me, essentially, give us another 2 years or so. You expect to see it another 2 years or so.
From that perspective?
Yes. Yeah. If that's what you're saying, what average people are hearing is another 2 years? You mean to tell me we got to go through another 2 years of this?
No. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. I'm saying in terms of how government intends to settle its own relationship financially with individuals and businesses in the country. Because you got to accept that the government owed almost $1.7 billion to the people of Barbados in some form or fashion. And therefore, the mechanism through which we repay that $1.7 billion, whether it is for goods and services that individual companies might have supplied to some government department that they weren't paid, or income tax refunds or whatever. I'm saying that whilst I accept that whilst these are things that the government owes, the rest of the economy now needs to start churning where money is circulating in a fashion that allows people to start to feel much more confident about their financial circumstances.
You say that the government is paying its debts, and we've heard that repeatedly. Grant Hotels Inc. says that they are now owed $80 million for a combination of Sam Lords mm-hmm. and Harry Smith, which has recently been acquired. They say, stretching mm-hmm. back as far as 2016, the former administration said they would pay them. That has not happened. That's a large sum mm-hmm. of money. The question is, not only are we looking at them, but how many other companies are in this kind of position?
And here's the nature of how complicated it is. Now, for an example like that, what we did when we came in and did the domestic debt restructurings, we said to companies, look, we do not have all of the money. As I said, that $1.7 billion, which was estimated at the time just for arrears, what you just cited there was related to the acquisition of land tax and other contingent liabilities of government. So the government of Barbados did not have all of the money to give everybody that it owed the same time. And therefore restructured a program to settle those arrears over a four-year period. Now, as I said, we have determined that there were some other, some peculiar parts that we would accelerate. For example, we determined that we will repay the income tax refunds, for example, within the first 2 years of the program, because those are individual, small, relatively small sums that could be dispensed with in the management. But for companies like that, we structured a program that would settle those payments through the debt restructure by issuing them bonds, which would pay them on a monthly basis and an agreed amount. Now, I can't speak individually to what
to this specific
to
one
that,
because
to that one. Because
when I spoke
that,
to the person from this company, they gave the impression that they didn't get that kind of communication.
Well, it's a little more complicated than what they say they owe, but that's, as I said, there's a judicial part that's left to sort that
out. Of course,
the broader point is,
how many companies are in this position?
I can't say to you how many companies, but I tell you the quantum of monies is significant, because when we
how look, significant
you're talking about in the better part of $300 to $400 million that when we came in were owed to companies of all types for all kinds of things. Now, in
how much of that has been settled so far?
Well, we started paying that on a monthly basis from April 2019.
Are you in a position to say how much of it has been paid off so far?
No, I don't have that. I can get the number in terms of how much has been paid. But as I said, when we did the debt restructuring in October of 2018, as I said, we structured it in a way to start from April 2019, which will allow us on a monthly basis to settle these things. Because as I said, we don't have all of the money to give everybody what the government owed them one time. And therefore, that's why I made the point earlier about the fact that confidence will return and you will get new investment when people start to get a real sense that the circumstance has changed. Because what has happened certainly is that people lost faith and trust in the government of Barbados.
Are you implying, therefore, this is one interpretation mm-hmm. to your answer, that confidence hasn't really returned yet?
No, confidence has returned.
Okay, so what's the difference between confidence
and trust
and this environment of trust that you're talking about?
Well, the reality is that people said that they were going to be paid. The government said it was going to pay people. It never did. We started a program where from April 2019 of last year, once you were a company with those large sums of monies, you agreed that we're going to pay you in this way. And therefore, in seeing that work through, trust then starts to come back into the system because people are being paid. Now, in every instance, we've had to go through certainly a validation exercise to get people onto the program. And therefore, it hasn't happened as smoothly as we would have liked. But as it continues to be implemented, then you will see, one, people being in a position now to settle, for example, their tax arrears with government, their statutory obligations, which we are starting to see. And that is what I'm talking about in terms of the true trust coming back into the system, because as government is making itself right with the people, whether businesses or individuals, I am seeing from the other side, both businesses and individuals now coming and writing to my office and certainly to the revenue authority saying, look, now that the government is paying these sums, I am now in a financial position to settle some of my statutory obligations in a way that's structured. And that's what I'm talking about, trust and confidence returning in a tangible way.
One more question before I go to the telephone sure. lines. From your vantage point, you highlight the positives. Mm-hmm. But what are the failures? Looking back at it, if it had to be done again over the last 20 months or so, mm-hmm. what would you honestly see as the things that could have been done better and those that others may call failure?
Well, I think certainly from a mechanical or technical perspective, one of the things that I believe we haven't done well in terms of government and the agencies that operate on behalf of the government is to have a clearer or cleaner sense of the data with respect to being able to settle these things much smoother. Because I mentioned earlier that having said to people that we were going to do things in this way, the cleanliness of the data, and what I'm talking about is the validation of invoices and those kinds of things. Because as you can appreciate, if you say that I owe you X amount of money, then the agency or the government needs to be able to validate that before it starts to pay. And the truth is that The government owed so many people for a whole host of things that the exercise of validating and trying to ensure that this is actually true, I think is something that could have been done better if we had a better streamlined process between government as well as some of the state-owned enterprises, which was absent.
How is that being corrected now?
Right, so we have, at the very outset, we started to request that the state-owned enterprises certainly submit to us on a monthly basis their financials, who they owe, what they owe them, in order to ensure that, one, we are monitoring the expenditure, but that we can better in the future manage and validate what it is we are doing. Because at the end of the day, if I'm supposed to be taking over debt from you, then it means that therefore on your books, you need to be able to reconcile that financially. And therefore, I'm saying that across agencies, across government, the strength of the systems to be able to do that simply was not there. So therefore, it took longer to be able to get people to a point where we say, okay, good, you're now onto the program to have it settled, because it was just too much. And I would say that is one of the things that I believe if we had better internal systems for government, meaning the communication and validation of these things, and certainly strengthening the support mechanism, I think would have been critical to helping to advance that cause. But again, communication as well is one thing that we've pushed for that to be cascaded at all levels, not just at the political level as we have been doing, but certainly for people in the organizations to take the ownership and responsibility for much more direct communication with their clients and those people that they would have owed, just to keep them up to date.
People are asking about their tax returns.
Yes.
They're not pleased. They got the promise that they would have been getting more money from the government, and as far as they're concerned, this is a promise not kept.
Well, remember, as I said, the settlement of the 2011 to 2016 tax returns, we said that we were going to pay that within the first 2 years of the Barbados Economic Recovery and Transformation Program. When we came in 2018, in 2018, we settled the 2017 tax returns that were due. As I've said in Parliament and in public, is that if there are any persons who have not yet received their 2017 tax returns, then kindly establish contact with the Revenue Authority, because we have settled 2017. 2018, because of the move to TAMIS, the filing deadline was extended to May of last year, and we have started to pay, most of the refund should have been paid by October of last year for 2018. And so the 2011 to 2016, as I said, were programmed to be repaid over the course of 2 years. And so therefore, persons will receive, persons have said to me they have received their income taxes for 2011, 12, 13, those refunds. And yes, persons have been asking about 14, 15, and 16. And the intention, certainly, as I said, was to, in the first year, deal with 11, 12, and 13. And in this second year now, deal with 14, 15, and 16 in a structured way. So yes, the people who have not yet received 2014 or 2015 or 2016. And I'm saying to the public that those will be worked through certainly in this second year of the program, as we allow for the planning out with respect to government settling these tax refunds with people. So if you have not received your 2018 tax refund, then it must mean that you either owe the government money or some assessment. Or I do know that there was an issue with respect to the payments, because we do want to make these payments digitally. And part of the issue is, from a technical perspective, we've been working certainly with the Revenue Authority to ensure that, one, once people file, that they submit their banking information at that point in time, so that when they're ready to pay, they can be paid electronically rather than go through this whole process of issuing checks. So all I'm saying to people is that if you have not received your 2018 tax refunds, then simply make contact with the Barbados Revenue Authority and let's have that settled as a matter of urgency, because the time has passed with respect to being able to do that. Now, I accept that the extension of the filing deadline last year would have created a small issue, but the time should have been, it has elapsed for them to be able to do the assessments, and therefore, if you're owed a refund, then the money certainly is there to pay you. So we have to do better by our own internal processes with respect to being able to do these evaluations, and I accept that that is clear. The mechanism, though, that we want to pay people is that we really do want to do so as easily as possible, and therefore the easiest way for us to be able to pay you is for you to submit certainly your banking information to us so that we can pay you rather than going through, because it really does take a whole lot to have these checks printed, go through a whole validation exercise, mail them out, and all of that costs money. And the reality is that the government wants to be much more efficient, and therefore as a first option, either some bank or credit union account, I think would assist certainly the Revenue Authority and even and government as a whole to be able to pay people faster, so that you don't have to go through this exercise of depositing monies on a bank and then having it having to wait for 3 days for the monies to clear. We want to be able to pay people much easier, and therefore we want to encourage persons to supply that financial information.
We have with us live in the studio on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks, Minister in the Ministry of Finance, Ryan Strawn. This is your opportunity to raise your questions and speak with him. Welcome to the caller. Hello.
Top of the day to you both.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Mr. Strawn, I have 2 points to raise with you. One was in last Thursday's Nation, headlined on page 2. It says, call for postal service boycott. And the minister responsible for that affair called me the next day to tell me that I was a bit harsh in my use of words. I happen to take a different view. Let me explain and see if you can agree with me. Now, the last time that issue was raised, people were paying $1.50 for the service. You have decided that from the 20th of January, just gone, people will pay $10 for the said service. Now, my calculation tells me that is 666.67% increase, which is onerous, to put it bluntly. Now, what the minister said to me the other day is, oh, that is only $8.50 increase. Well, you see, when we start earning big money, $8.50 is no money at all. I agree. But when you have poor people, poor, ordinary people, who are paying this $8.50, trust me, with all the other taxes that are levied, people just can't afford it. And you really better believe that is a true statement of fact. People just cannot afford $8.50. I mean, what was so... And let me put another point to you. If we do an extension and say, well, that is over a 9-year period, but it still amounts to 74% increase per year, it is ridiculous. I've never known of anyone who has received that kind of increase in income. But don't miss the point. You are looking at one item out of hundreds, sometimes thousands of other areas that they're dealing with. So don't look at the 850 and think, oh, that ain't much money. Because when people have other things to do, it is their problem.
Now, right, No. Let's get the response. You've had a lot to say.
So I have something else to say.
Let's get the response.
Okay. Let me just indicate that part of the reform of government, and I wanted to, I'm glad you raised it in this way, because a number of fees that are have been levied or charged in government for a long time, David, and call on the listeners, really have not been reviewed in any way, in any substantial way, for the better part of 25, 30 years. And the reality is that unless we come to some reasoning with respect to the fact that the fees that are being charged by certain agencies of government in some instances need to reflect the, in a sense, the cost of delivering those services. And so this is just one instance where, in terms of the arrival notice with respect to the post office, this fee has not been raised for some time. And there are a whole host of other fees that across government also needs to be reviewed. And part of the program is to allow for the government of Barbados, in order to better deliver the services to the people that the people want, is to have a reflection in terms of the costs associated with those, what the government can support in terms of the program, and what the public will be able to share in terms of the cost. Because at the end of the day, we've given a commitment to reinstate the tuition fees and focus a lot more with respect to provisional education, other services in the country. And therefore, in that context, as the cost of education is going up, if you're going to be continuing that provision, then it means that the other fees and services that are being offered by government of necessity will have to be evaluated.
So that means brace yourself for more increases in fees.
Well, I can't say
that's
brace
what it
yourself
comes down to.
For more increases, but I'm saying that we have to be circumspect with respect to what it is.
Can you give the public in the next year or so any idea of the quantum of money that the government is expecting to get from these increased fees from areas that have been languishing for all these years?
Well, David, at the end of the day, within the post office space, it is a very dynamic, competitive area, and the challenge here is to ensure that the post office is still able to provide the kind of service, and it's providing a wonderful service, but it has to do so in a very competitive
didn't relate to the post office alone,
right, in this instance. But I'm saying that in terms of fees, there are a whole host of things that it costs the government to supply those fees, and therefore the services, and therefore there is a review ongoing with respect to the level of fees. Because at the end of the day, we have to be able to provide a quality service to the public. And I'm saying that.
So you can't give me a figure right
now? I can't give you a figure from the perspective that a lot of it is still demand driven. So, for example, and the caller didn't raise it, but there was an increase with respect to the marriage fees recently. No.
That's true?
Yeah.
Divorce too?
But I'm saying that's demand driven. So therefore, that is not a revenue-raising necessarily.
So more
issue.
People get married? The statistics indicate that more Bajans are getting married, and therefore those fees are going to rake in a lot more money?
No, I don't think that's not the issue. The issue is what is the cost to provide the services that is being asked with respect to that specific section. Whether or not more Barbadians or visitors come to get married, that's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to get married. I would encourage all Barbadians to get married.
My caller wants to know what the fees have gone to. Am I correct?
I don't have that on.
You are very right.
I don't have that particular number in my head. But no, I apologize. I don't have that number in my head. But I'm saying that in reviewing what is involved with respect to providing the service, there has to be some reflection in terms of what the public will bear with respect to that. And at the appropriate time, as would be the case, then I would anticipate that we will see that. But it's not all going to happen at the same time. As you can imagine, in much the same way as the government does not have all of the money to pay back everybody that it owes, it will be a sequencing with respect to how these things are introduced. So I can't say to you, was the quantum or was the specific timeline with respect to that.
We're coming right back. Okay, the caller on the line had another question. Try to make it as brief as possible, sir, given the time that we spent on the first question. All right, he might have gone, but this person says that I've listened with interest to the minister. I would like to report that I am yet to receive my 2018 income tax refund. It was processed on November 1st, 2019. In answer to my query, BRAS says the refunds are paid as funds become available. I will receive it in due course. Note, this reply was sent January 13th, 2020. Contrary to what the minister said, I am yet to receive the refund, which is less than $1,000. And there was somebody else who said that as far as they're concerned, they called BRA and they were told that there is no money.
If they were told, sorry, if someone told you that there is no money, that is certainly not my understanding in terms of the monies that we've made available with respect to the refunds for 2018. And therefore, that certainly cannot be true in terms of what has been communicated to the caller or the person sending the WhatsApp. What was the date? November?
It was processed in November.
Processed in November. But I certainly can get a report in terms of processing, because I know that we had until October 31st to repay, and that those repayments, some of them went into November of 2019. And as I said, if there are still any persons who have not received their tax refunds, then it must mean it's not an issue of money. I want to assure the public of that. But two, to ensure that the whatever the assessments say that they have, then that's something that needs to be reconciled, certainly as a matter of urgency, because there certainly is no, as I said, respect out in terms of the program. Means that we know, for example, when people file, what is the maximum liability potentially with respect to the refunds that are owed when people file in April. And therefore, what the assessments then go through to determine what is the final number. We make provisions with respect to that. So in terms of staying current, monies have been allocated to be able to pay those refunds. And as I said, not everything has gone as smoothly as possible. And therefore, I will ask that the caller write to my office and provide their timeless number so they can have it followed up as a matter of urgency. Because from the Ministry of Finance's perspective, there's certainly not an issue of money. And I know that 100% is not an issue of money. And therefore, the issue of internal processing clearly would have to be reviewed to determine why that is the case.
Okay, just a reminder that this is Down to Brass Tacks, and this program is going until 2 o'clock today. Welcome to the next caller.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
This is a bit of a diversion. However, there was a shooting at Sheraton Mall months ago, and the police did not detain the people who own Sheraton Mall. I'm getting my point. There was a shooting at the school, and the police did not detain the principal. There was a shooting here in church.
Well, no. Let's be realistic about this. One has to look at the information that the police have that will determine who they detain. We can discuss and try to try this matter on the air. You should know better than that. Okay? Of course, because you must be aware that is influenced by what information the police have in any specific case. But on what basis can you and I discuss that here today? This is not appropriate. It certainly isn't. I don't know how you got it in your head that you could come and raise that kind of issue here. Okay? Let's not go there. Let's not go there any further. Let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hello? Let's move to another caller.
Hello, good morning.
Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. Good morning to Mr. Strawn.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about some inefficiencies in the private sector and bring some examples, but I was switched up a bit. Now, the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and the private sector trade team seem satisfied with the way things are going under this administration. Now, granted, the government has undertook restructuring measures and has granted some concessions to businesses. My question is, what are the prospects prospects for a private sector-led growth that was talked about when Barbados was in the throes of severe economic crisis. How is the private sector contributing to growth? I could be wrong, but I have not heard the governor of the central bank address specifically private sector-led growth in Barbados. So where is the growth going to come from? Now, I have argued, and I could be wrong, I'm not an economist, that the government has no choice but to remain the largest employer because we don't have a private sector that is, one, homogenous and that is sufficiently able to stimulate growth in the economy without offending shareholders' interests.
Okay, you need a response to that, therefore?
Yes, please.
No, I think it goes back to, in part, to what I said earlier about government's role, certainly in a small open economy and in the context that the government owed a lot of people, including businesses, money. And therefore, any prospect for growth will always be private sector led. But the government has a critical role to play to ensure that the environment is conducive to doing business. Now, confidence, whether you like it or not, how people feel about the circumstances and then determines the level of risk that they will undertake. And I spent the early part of this discussion indicating that the government is seeking to unravel itself financially in terms of settling its obligations with the private sector, including individuals in this country, and therefore allowing those individuals to have greater confidence about going discharging their affairs. So,
but isn't this question more about the structure of this economy and the degree to which we can rely on the private sector to provide the growth that has been spoken about, and switching from the government to the private sector?
Precisely. But that still requires the government to ensure that the management of the public finances are such that it allows the private sector to go about the business of what they're doing.
But what's their capacity in your judgment?
Capacity is a different issue, because in the context of certainly the government's credit rating, it would have hampered the ability of the private sector to undertake new investment, and therefore ma'am, I just want to indicate that government settles its affairs, both at the macro level, then it means that the ability for the private sector to attract new investment or to conduct new investment will be costly. And therefore, it is critical in a small open economy that the government pretty much has its house in order so that the private economic agents can get on with their business.
Yes, ma'am.
May I respond to that, sir? First of all, the private sector is not a homogenous group. You speak about the private sector as though it's a homogenous group.
No,
right?
I don't.
First of all, we have a private sector that is largely commercial, largely retail. Do not manufacture anything to any significant degree for exportation so that we can bring in revenue. So it really depends on what is happening circularly in the economy. All right? Now, I don't want to knock the private sector and say that they should lead growth, but that has been the mantra that has been purported. Now the private sector seems some settlement in terms of the economy. I am asking the question, how are they contributing to stabilizing this economy? Now, you talk about government settling its debt with the private sector. Yes, that is understood, and that has to be ongoing. But at the same time, it is incumbent upon the private sector to be generating jobs, to be generating sufficient revenue that it can hold its own, rather than consistently waiting on government to create the enabling environment for them to expand and grow. Expand and grow in terms of buy and sell, expand and grow in terms of being commercial.
But ma'am, let me say to you that a very important factor in all of this is the ease of doing business. The private sector will tell you that that has been a major deterrent to their expansion. The government has come and said, we agree, and we are putting these things in place to facilitate it. The question is, over the last 20 months or so, what do we have to show? To what extent do you and other people doing business in Barbados go into various places and find that nothing has really changed? But the minister has to tell us what has changed in that respect.
Agreed. While I agree with you, Ms. Ellis, I want to say something. The focus should not be only on the ease of doing business. That is one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is finding, now we understand the credit ratings and how it's impacted on our ability to borrow, and it has impacted upon investors' confidence. No, we have investors' confidence returning, according to the minister. People are now being more confident to invest in Barbados with the new administration. So I'm asking the question, we keep focusing on the ease of business and so on and so forth. What is the duty of the private sector to go out there right on the ebb of what the government has created and bring in the kind of revenue and get on a sustainable
level? How on earth can that be done if the environment is one which is too slow to respond?
But I am saying to you, Mr. Ellis, and I'm not going to raise my voice at you, I am saying to you that the private sector, there are different clusters of the private sector. Some are more able to do what I'm describing than some. You keep focusing and keep hitting on ease of access, ease of doing business, and you're talking about investments. And I am talking about manufacturing something that you can export, that you can actually see revenue coming into the country so that the private sector itself can grow and expand. Don't forget, there are clusters in the private sector. Some who are able to go off without the dependency on the ease of business, because they probably don't need that, because that's investment. They are able to create jobs. They are able to create things for export. That is what I'm talking
about. Okay, well,
let's
move on.
There are a couple of elements to that I just want to respond very quickly. And it relates to the fact that we do have a situation where, yes, we want to have more local domestic production, if you like. But the reality in terms of being able to mobilize certainly our financial resources as a country is that the reality of the global supply chain you cannot defeat. And therefore, Barbados, through a policy where, yes, we can, for certain things, we can manufacture here and create the value. But I think on a wholesale basis, any product that we want to bring to market has to be led by us leveraging what the global supply chain would allow us to do, such that whether it is, the focus should not always be on whether it is manufactured in Barbados, but where are we going to create the value added globally and allow for the products to get to the market, such that the very earning of foreign exchange can come back to the country because we have leveraged the global supply chain. And that is where there needs to be a new ethos with respect to how we are going to mobilize domestic resources.
Yes, but the caller is saying,
And that requires a certain mindset.
When you look at Barbados, successive administrations have lamented how the private sector in this country sees its role.
Agreed.
And whether you can realistically depend upon it to produce the results.
There are elements within the private sector that can do that. And this is where we are working, not just with respect to the ease of doing business, but changing or facilitating those persons who want to operate in the global environment. Because unless we understand that the global supply chain is dominant, how does Barbados leverage the global supply chain to bring whatever products to market using the global supply chain? So the manufacturing does not have to take place in Barbados. But the ownership of the manufacturing process, the ownership of the IP, is what is critical with respect to being able to leverage truly the global supply chain.
Just explain for the average person what you are talking about when you say the global supply chain, that obviously is an
economic
term.
Let me give you an example. We all have iPads or Samsung phones or whatever, but I'll use the iPad as an example. Apple is a U.S. company, but there's not one iPad that's manufactured in the United States. And the reality is that they use the global supply chain in terms of having the electronics assembled somewhere in Asia. They own the process, they own the rights with respect to the software that they deploy on it. And therefore, it is how do we mobilize the funds that we have in Barbados, and certainly by some extension in the region, to do something similar. Now, I do accept that there is some manufacturing that can be done locally, but to do it locally and to be to get the kind of capacity to export, it's going to be very difficult if you do not utilize the global supply chain. If you try to bring everything to Barbados, it's going to cost to get here. It's going to cost to manufacture. And therefore, if we want to be realistic about any manufacturing in the context of Barbados, then we have to relook the very nature of manufacturing and how it's progressing globally and the kind of technology that exists already. And therefore, whether it's with our designers, if we want them to be able to get to market, use the global supply chain, get the samples ready so that when people go to these shows to exhibit whatever it is they're exhibiting and they get an order, that they just pick up the phone and call whoever it is that's going to manufacture it, get it delivered, and the money's come to Barbados. But if you try to do it from here, where an order could be as 50,000, 100,000 of something, but you don't have the capacity to do that consistently, then you're going to defeat yourself.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. A notice here that people with respiratory illnesses living in the vicinity of the mangrove landfill in St. Thomas are being asked to leave the area until conditions caused by a fire at the landfill are eased this morning. The Ministry of Health and Wellness has advised persons with asthma and other respiratory illnesses that if they are feeling unwell, they should also seek immediate medical attention at the nearest polyclinic or their private doctor. The Sanitation Service Authority has reported that as a result of the fire, thick black smoke is emanating from the northern section of the landfill, impacting on areas stretching from Arch Hall in St. Thomas to Trent's in St. James. This is Down to Brass Tacks.